Okay, so my talk is entitled Why Ordination? Why an Order? And I want to start with my own experience and remembering the moment at which I decided to request ordination. So, as some of you will have heard last night who were in my little group at any point, it took me a long time to ask to be a Mitra. So it was actually 6 years before I asked to be a Mitra and a further 2 years before I requested ordination. So my conditioning was quite a sceptical conditioning. I had lots of questions. And I also, I think in my own way, was quite individualistic, probably. I was wary of groups. But at the same time, I got very involved with activities around the centre. I worked in the one of the main women's businesses, the Cherry Orchard Restaurant, as it was called then, and I lived in communities right from very early on coming to the centre. But as I say, it was 8 years before I asked for ordination, and it was on the team of the big London Buddhist Centre retreat. So every year at Christmas and at summer, but Christmas I think still tends to be the larger retreat, there's a very big retreat for anybody who wants to come, so a lot of newcomers. And usually there's at least 100, if not more, people on that retreat. And the LBC hires a building to hold the retreat. And I'd been invited as a Mitra to be on the team of that retreat. It also has a very big team, that retreat, sometimes about 15 or so people from the centre. And we have a team retreat, or we had a team retreat before the actual public retreat. And on that particular retreat, it was a few days before the full puja was introduced. So in the evening there'd be a little introductions to the puja, and each night we'd do a little bit more of the puja in one way or another. And on this particular night it was the first full puja, so that people on the retreat were beginning to make offerings. So in the puja the team would be making offerings, and then gradually, you know, a few people from the retreat, the first few people from the retreat, made their offerings. So that was the point at which I knew that I wanted to ask for ordination, when these people from the retreat started to make offerings in that first full puja. So what were the elements that were there? Well, I was part of a team with friends. I didn't know everybody closely, but I knew everybody, at least by sight, and probably quite a number of those people I'd been in classes with at the centre and had probably taught me meditation at some point. So some of that team were more experienced, more developed than me, and some were peers. I was on the team, I was there on the retreat, working for the retreat for its own sake. It was entirely voluntary. There was no remuneration, you might say, in terms of money or anything like that. It was a shared project. The retreat was a shared project. We were doing it together, and the in the team retreat, we'd really started to get to know each other better. It was giving. We were all on that team. We were all giving of ourselves. And the greatest gift, according to the Buddha, is the gift of the Dharma. So we were all giving, in our own way, the gift of the Dharma. We were relating to others' potential. And there was a heartfelt sense of others' capacity to grow. Line in the Threefold Puja, an ever-widening circle, the Sangha grows. A very strong sense of that experience on that retreat. And there was an arising in me of faith and inspiration, very strongly. So a deepening of going for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha in all those different ways. So what was in my experience at that moment? Well, during the whole of that retreat. There was inspiration, faith, meaning, friendship, vision, generosity, and altruism. Just to mention that the term altruism literally means otherism. So there was awareness of other people in that way. So my asking for ordination was a commitment to all of that, to those values. A commitment to inspiration, faith, meaning, friendship, vision, generosity and altruism. And the commitment is saying, I want those values to continue to be central in my life, whether I'm on retreat or not. It's a commitment to the true refuges of the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, which I can lose track of, like any of us can lose track of. I want to commit myself in such a way that I can keep remembering and my friends can keep reminding me that this is what is most important to me. So I'm moving towards those values, living out those values, which are what my life is most essentially about. So ordination is a commitment to living and continuing to live the spiritual life, to become someone who walks in the Dharma, a Dharma farer or a Dharmachari. So what happens at ordination? Well, there's one ceremony with two parts. And initially there's the private ordination ceremony, in which your preceptor witnesses that expression of your values. She witnesses the going for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, and the undertaking to practice the 10 precepts. So this is the essence of ordination. And any ordination involves taking on precepts or actions in the world. So the preceptor is a witness, a spiritual friend to whom one expresses one's deepest aspirations, one's deepest longings in a simple, profound ritual. She doesn't confer anything on you except your name. She gives you your name, but she doesn't confer anything else on you. She's a witness to what's already taking place within yourself. She's a witness of your own aspiration and your own decision. But our names are, of course, a very strong reminder of that commitment. So my name, Maitreyi, it literally translates as the kindly one. So that's a very strong teaching for me in my life, in my order life. And it's also the feminine equivalent of Maitreya, the Buddha to be. So that's an extremely strong inspiration and an extremely strong inspiration in my life. Witnessing can maybe sound a bit abstract or detached even, but the actual experience as a preceptor of witnessing someone's effective going for refuge to the three jewels is profoundly moving. You often hear people say that it's the purest and most beautiful communication they have ever had. Making a commitment to one's deepest values and ideals to a friend who resonates with that. And the preceptor is so called because they are witnessing one's undertaking of the precepts. In this case, the 10 precepts. So through the practice of the 10 precepts, we are acting to transform body, speech and mind. And there's a transition at ordination from taking on the 5 precepts to taking on the 10 precepts. And that involves more speech precepts and the mind precepts. So with the mind precepts, we are seeking to directly work on what holds us back from insight into reality. So we're seeking to directly work on the greed, hatred and delusion that creates samsara. And that's why one of our training retreats here is called From Ethics to Insight. So on that retreat we study the 10 precepts. So this part of the ordination ceremony, the private ordination, symbolises our commitment as an individual. It's what most embodies and expresses our own values. We're not doing it to belong. We're not doing it for acceptance. We're not doing it for status. And we're not doing it for security. It's an individual act, our own decision that we're making. And then the public ordination ceremony makes it clear that while we commit ourselves as individuals, we do so in the company of others who are or have similarly made that commitment. The public ordination ceremony demonstrates that in the spiritual life, we can't go it alone. There's a seminar extract which often used to be studied in Mitra study. I don't know if it's still the case. And it's called The Bi-Tendential Value of Being from a seminar that Bhante gave in 1976 on mind in Buddhist psychology. And in that seminar, he makes this statement, which is very, very significant, and which I always bring to mind. He says, "You, as it were, inverted commas, you cannot gain reality or enlightenment. You cannot gain reality. It's only you plus others who can." So, you cannot gain reality. It's only you plus others who can. And a bit later, so why is that? It's not just because we need support to practice, that we need role models, that we need a teacher. It's because practicing the spiritual life and living out our deepest values means going beyond our own self-interest. That entrenched view of ourselves as the centre of the universe. Our practice means going beyond that. And a bit later in the seminar, Bhante says, "In fact, the best way to approach reality is via the object rather than the subject. Because to do things via the subject is your natural one-sided tendency." So given that all our experience is experienced in terms of subject and object, self and other, he's saying the best way to approach reality is via the object rather than the subject. Because to do things via the subject is your natural one-sided tendency. So we need to be able to imaginatively identify with others more and more fully. Not only our nearest and dearest, but all sorts of people. Older, younger, people of different cultures and races, different conditioning, you name it, different sexuality, all differences that we can imagine. and to engage with some of those others deeply and openly. This is why we have the emphasis in the Tri Ratna Order and movement on friendship, spiritual friendship, Kalyana Mitrata, which translates as beautiful, auspicious friendship. It's beautiful and auspicious because it helps us and we help each other to make progress on the path. So not only does the public ordination ceremony make it clear that we commit ourselves in the company of others and that it's our connection with those others which is in itself a practice, but it also symbolises what I often call our collective project, the collective project of the order of becoming a bodhisattva in the world. So a bodhisattva is a sattva, a being, who has attained bodhi, has awakened, become enlightened. And the symbol of the Tri Ratna order is the bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara, who has 11 heads and 1,000 arms and hands. Well, it's an image I'm sure you're very familiar with, and it's the image on our shrine, made up, actually, if you look at it closely, of hundreds and hundreds of tiny faces of order members. So I'm sure you know the story of the 1,000-armed Avalokiteshvara. Avalokiteshvara, the hearer of the cries of the world, who tried to go it alone. Initially, Avalokiteshvara tried to go it alone, to convert the demons of the land of snow in Tibet. He saw that the land of snow was on fire with suffering, with greed, hatred and delusion, and he felt profoundly moved to convert these beings to the Dharma. So making tremendous efforts in meditation and through his mantra, he realized, despite those efforts, he had not pacified or converted even a fraction of those demons of greed, hatred and delusion, and the people were still full of suffering. So he had what you might call an extreme crisis of confidence, what we would call a spiritual crisis. And he literally cracked up. His body cracked into 1,000 pieces and his head into 11 pieces. And in agony he cried out to his teacher Amitabha, who transformed the broken head so that he had 10 heads facing in different directions, so he could better hear and see the cries of the world. And Amitabha transformed the broken body so that he had 1,000 arms and hands, each holding a different implement reaching out to the world, and 2 hands clasped to his heart, holding the jewel of the bodhicitta, the awakened heart. And Amitabha placed his own head at the top of the 10 heads so that Avalokiteshvara would always be in connection with his teacher. So you could say that at this point Avalokiteshvara became fit for purpose. So now I'm already exploring the question, why an order? So, we can't go it alone in the spiritual life unless we're a Buddha. The Buddha. So, just to remind you again of Bhante's statement, you cannot gain reality, enlightenment. It's only you plus others who can. So, there's a magical element involved in this, that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. A number of individuals who share a common commitment, working and practicing together in harmony, can bring about what Bhante has described as a different kind of consciousness amongst them. And he's termed this the third order of consciousness. So the first order of consciousness is group consciousness, and the second order of consciousness is individual consciousness. But the third order of consciousness occurs, or can occur, when a number of individuals who share a common commitment are practicing in harmony together. So this different kind of consciousness is the ground in which the awakened or enlightened heart can arise. And this something else which arises, or which you could say takes over, this awakened or enlightened heart, has been described by Bhante as a non-egoic stream of spiritual energy directed for the benefit of all beings. A non-egoic stream of spiritual energy directed for the benefit of all beings. And it doesn't matter at this point in whom this non-egoic stream of spiritual energy or this awakened heart arises. Whether it arises through me or through you. All that matters is that there are the conditions in which it may arise. And the Tree Ratan order has the potential to create those conditions. In fact, Bhante has gone so far as to say the Tree Ratan order is a bodhisattva working in the world. And it's also been said that the only kind of practitioner who doesn't need an order is a stream entrant. Someone whose level of spiritual development is irreversible. But a stream entrant is the equivalent of a bodhisattva. And one of the bodhisattva precepts, one of the bodhisattva vows, one of the vows that somebody takes in a bodhisattva ordination, is to gather a community. And Sangharakshita took the bodhisattva precepts from Dada Rinpoche. So one of the precepts that he undertook was to gather a community. And a non-egoic stream of spiritual energy would naturally wish to create the conditions for others to develop. So a stream entrant who doesn't personally need an order in that sense would nevertheless create an order or the equivalent, because the needs of others would be a deeper need for him or herself. So a stream entrant would wish to gather a community, whether or not that community was termed an order. But of course, this all begs many questions. Why not simply just practice taking teachings from wherever seems helpful? Why are there Buddhist movements and practitioners who don't see the need of an order? I'm sure that you probably have questions, many questions of this kind. And Bhante felt a need to address some of these questions in a paper which came out some years ago called What is the Western Buddhist Order? So it was before the change of name. It would now be called What is the Tree Ratna Buddhist Order? And I'm sure some of you have read or even studied that paper. But in that paper he says, in response to questions, my approach stems from the nature of spiritual life itself. For commitment to be strong, it has, in a sense, to be narrow. It is only through intensity of commitment and practice that you achieve any results. You will not achieve that intensity if you try to follow different teachers and their different teachings and practices at the same time. You need to follow a particular set of teachings and practices within a particular framework, under a particular teacher, in order to experience any real progress. And you must have confidence in that teacher and his teaching, otherwise you will not be able to apply yourself consistently and successfully. So when I was writing up this quotation from that paper, I looked up in the dictionary the origin of the word commit or commitment. And it comes from the Latin comitere, meaning to join, entrust. To join or entrust. So joining and entrusting are the same word in that root of commitment. And I think this is very interesting because the questions we have, or certainly the questions I had prior to requesting ordination, and since, I expect, are often ones of confidence and trust. So there's just four questions that I came up with, that I'm sure you have lots more, but there are four questions which I thought were interesting to look at. And this is the last part of my talk now. So the first question is it a cult? Is the Triratna Buddhist order and movement a cult? Well, I can tell you, officially, no. Because some years ago, somebody did some research into cults, and they took a number of religious and different groups and movements and examined them under all sorts of headings, and the Friends of the Western Buddhist Order was one of the organisations, if you like, that they, the groups that they examined. And officially they decided, the person who did this research, that it wasn't a cult. And one of the reasons, a number of reasons that it wasn't a cult, but one of the reasons was that cults are easy to join and hard to leave. And the Triratna Buddhist Order is hard to join and easy to leave. Okay? So that is, joining involves a process of training, of reflection, of thinking things through, of deeper study of the Dharma, of fuller understanding of the order, of what it means to practice the precepts, of having real connections and friendships with others who are or will be order members. So all that's involved in joining the order. And, well, is it easy to leave? Well, there's often much discussion and some sadness if a fellow order member wishes to leave. But any and every order member is free to leave the order if they so decide. Some people, as I say, engage in quite a bit of discussion about that. Others have just made their mind up through their own process and contact their preceptor and let them know that they wish to leave the order. So they are free to do that, and they're also free to be reordained. A number of order members who have resigned from the order have since been reordained. So, second question. Will it curtail my freedom to join the order? Well, I'm sure you've heard the expression shopping around or not shopping around. And once you are training for ordination, we ask you not to shop around. We ask you to focus on the retreats and activities within Triratna, so that you can really deepen your understanding, engagement with Triratna. Prior to that, you know, obviously you're free to explore whatever you wish to explore. But this is because, I've just quoted what Bhante said in that paper, that for commitment to be strong, it has, in a sense, to be narrow. It is only through intensity of commitment and practice that you achieve any results. You will not achieve that intensity if you try to follow different teachers and their different teachings and practices at the same time. And I remember one of my worries before being ordained. I suddenly thought, oh my goodness, I'll have to go to a chapter meeting every Sunday night for the rest of my life. And that, to an individualist, is quite a thought. So, but then, of course, you know, it's not like that, is it? It's not like that. Why do we join a chapter? We join a chapter because joining a chapter is part of our practice. Our practice is not simply meditation or even simply study. Our practice is other people. Our practice is friendship. Our practice is going out to, opening up to other people who are different from us. We don't go into chapters with our mates. We may have a mate or two in our chapter, but we go into chapters with all sorts of people who we may or may not feel an immediate rapport with. So our chapters in themselves are a practice. And also a very rich and inspiring context in which to be. So just as an aside, if you like, in this discussion, this question, will it curtail my freedom? I just want to mention something about Shraddha, or faith. So it's traditionally said there are three kinds of faith, and it names them as deep conviction, lucidity, and longing for those things which are real, have value, and are possible. So I won't go into that in any detail just now, but the second of these is lucid faith. And again, Sangharakshita says about lucid faith, the lucid mind does not arise from a cool, objective recognition of the three jewels. It is a response to them, so a response to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. A response which at once introduces a certain order and clarity into one's life and mind. There are certain things one is going to do and certain things one is not going to do. Conflict and indecision give way to great clarity and relief. So this is the characteristic of lucid faith, that conflict and indecision give way to great clarity and relief. And along with that, there is a very well-known aphorism of Sangharakshita's which says, commitment is freedom. So in this kind of commitment, there is lucid faith, where conflict and indecision give way to clarity and relief. So something to think about. So my third question is, well, what if it's not the best order? How about that? What if the Tree Ratna Buddhist order is not the best order and movement? How do you know? So, will it take me to stream entry and to insight? Well, my response to this is a story that I've often quoted, which I've been telling it for so long that I'm not even sure where it came from originally. I first heard it many, many years ago. But it's a story about a woman in the Croydon Sangha who was trying to decide whether or not to become a Mitra. And she went to see Bhante. And one of the things she wanted to ask Bhante was, how do I decide, or should I become a Mitra? And she wanted to know, are there stream entrants in the order? That was her question to Bhante. Are there stream entrants in the order? Because if he said to her, yes, there are stream entrants in the order, then that would give her the confidence that she felt she needed to commit herself to becoming a Mitra. And I don't know, obviously, exactly what Bhante's words were, but as I heard the story, what he said to her in so many words was that she was putting the cart before the horse. Her question was putting the cart before the horse. Because if she made that commitment to becoming a Mitra, that was something she felt a desire or an urge to do, and she followed through with that, then she would be adding her practice and her energy. She'd be putting her energy into the Sangha. And by her putting her energy into the Sangha, she'd be one of the conditions which would create further conditions in which this third order of consciousness, or the bodhicitta, could arise. So I thought that was a very interesting response to her question. She was looking for proof, and Bhante didn't give her proof, but he gave her, I would think, inspiration. So, in the question, what if the Triratna order is not the best? Also, my answer is, well, it just has to be good enough. It doesn't have to be the best. What is the best? How would one know what the best was? It only has to be good enough. It just has to be good enough to give you the conditions for practice that you need. So, the question might be instead, do you trust your teacher's exposition of the Dharma and the effect it has on yourself and those around you? Have you really studied that teaching, and have you reflected enough on the changes in yourself through practicing? And we touched on that a bit, didn't we, last night in the conversation cafe. So we need to do that reflecting on the changes we've experienced in ourselves, and often we forget to do that. So the last question, will it give me what I want in life? So I've been reflecting on this, that we all have human needs and we all have existential needs. Well, they're not separate, are they? We want to be happy, we want to be fulfilled, we want to be secure. But it's important to realise that we can't join the order as an end in itself, as something that will give us happiness, fulfilment and safety. Because if we do, we'll almost certainly be disappointed sooner or later. If we're joining the order as something that will give us happiness, fulfilment and safety, then what we're doing, effectively, is going for refuge to the order and not going for refuge to the three jewels. So the order is a context in which we can deepen our going for refuge to the three jewels. The order is not in itself a true refuge. It's full of all sorts of people like you and me, the majority of whom are probably not stream entrants, all of whom are still working with their conditioning, all of whom have blind spots. But all of whom can continue to deepen their going for refuge, and all of whom are always in a position where we can take initiative. So whatever we come up against, whatever the difficulties, each one of us can choose to respond with generosity, kindness, and, if not wisdom, at least right view. That is our going for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And that is what our commitment as order members reminds and encourages us to do, and to communicate that to others in whatever context we find ourselves. We need the Dharma and the world needs the Dharma. So in that sense, being in the order certainly gives me what I want in life. Thank you.